So council are approaching and sitting down. Please do so. Get yourselves comfortable. I'll ask the marshal to call the third matter on our calendar today. Please go ahead.
It's 819-0148. Jacob Kanaki, jury petitioner, respondent versus Beatrice Kanaki, appellant.
All right, and to both council, I just want to welcome you here today. We look forward to our conversation with you, and I encourage you to do a couple of things. First of all, definitely keep your eye on the clock so that we all know where we are. We do look forward to the conversation, but sometimes it goes very, very rapidly. Secondly, as you do get to the podium, please say your name, the client you represent, and take whatever time you need to make adjustments to the height of the podium or the microphone. So thank you. With that, you can proceed.
Council, may it please the court. My name is Carla Shellberg. I represent the appellant in this matter, Beatrice Kanaki. And we are here today to cure an injustice that was committed in the lower court. A judgment decree was entered to end a over 30-year marriage. And the entry of that judgment decree divided the valued property 66% to the husband, 34% to the wife. The non-valued property, which was acreage in Kenya, divided that 0.3% to the wife and 99.6% to the husband. But more importantly, the entry of this judgment decree denied my client's request made in the answer for maintenance, denied my client's request for attorney's fees, denied my client's request for health coverage without any factual findings or agreement. You cannot enter a judgment decree without an agreement or a trial. A trial did not happen here, and there is no record of an agreement for the issues of maintenance, attorney's fees, and health insurance. None.
So, counsel, I'm looking at what I believe your client's counsel, and I realize it may be someone different than you were, submitted as proposed stipulated findings. And November, I believe it was November 12th. And that was after Judge Bryan had said, no, you can't withdraw from the settlement regarding the property agreement. But in that, I thought your client's proposal addresses the health coverage and maintenance and those issues. I just want to be really clear about that, because I read that proposal as saying no need for maintenance and offering an agreement on health coverage.
First of all, I was not aware that that was in the record. We tried to get it. It was confidential. I understood that the court said that he was going to sign the respondent's proposal. But the counsel who proposed that made it very clear that he was doing that under duress, that he told the court on page 66 of our appendix in the transcript, she is otherwise not agreeable to anything. And the otherwise was the distribution of just those two newly identified pieces of property. He cannot, even with a submission of a judgment decree pursuant to the court's direction, bind my client without something on the record or a signature.
But wouldn't this proposal come under that? And I'm thinking specifically before, and I know a lot of your argument gets at the whether or not it was an abuse of discretion to vacate, not to vacate the stipulation about the property settlement.
Right, correct.
But I just want to make sure I understand your arguments on the spousal maintenance and the insurance. Wouldn't your client's proposal in saying that medical and dental insurance, both parties carry their own, spousal maintenance, she waives the right, each waives their right to receive temporary or permanent spousal maintenance. Isn't that an agreement?
Not if it wasn't condoned by my client. And we have evidence in the record, Your Honor, where that lawyer that supposedly drafted that document says to the court, my client agrees to none of this. And it's in page 66. She had to have signed that document or have had to have agreed to it on the record. There is no agreement on the record. The first time this supposed agreement was read into the record, there's no questions about maintenance. There's no questions about whether it's fair. There's no evidence about agreement to attorney's fees. So no, Your Honor, I don't think a lawyer can bind their client submitting a stipulated J&D that they were ordered to submit by the court without a signature or something on the record. And in this case, we have it clear that she didn't agree to it. That counsel, I'll direct the court to page 66. The lawyer said, fine, Your Honor, I'd submit it, but I want to make it clear that outside of the distribution of those two newly discovered pieces of property, and this is the exact quote, she otherwise is not agreeable to anything. So, no, an attorney cannot bind a client in that manner. And even if the court finds that it could, this judgment decree should fail on a number of other arguments. But I do not believe that the court can, in good conscience or consistent with law, bind my client to a waiver of spousal maintenance and giving up attorney's fees when there is no evidence of an agreement. The other issue that is very close to that, Your Honor, is that this judge, Judge Bryan, had a obligation to determine that this judgment decree was fair and reasonable. If you look to Karen v. Karen, it requires, it says, the court has a duty to protect the issues of both parties to ensure that the stipulation is fair and reasonable.
So, counsel, if I did want to ask you about that, because yeah. I'm glad you brought it up, because I'm looking at, and maybe the case you're talking about says something different, but I'm looking at Minnesota Statute 518.58, Subdivision 1, and the statute talks about the court shall make a just and equitable division of the marital property. And then it says, after making findings regarding the division of the property. So my reading of that, and I want you to tell me how yours differs, is that, well, okay, that this means that the court has to make a just and equitable division, but it doesn't require written findings saying this is just and equitable, but needs to make the written findings about the division, which happened here. So how am I wrong about that?
If we go to that, Your Honor, it made findings that's based on no evidence. This is a very important point. There is never a stipulated J&D entered in this case. There is never a stipulation of facts. So the findings regarding maintenance, the findings regarding distribution of property, they are not based on facts. They are only based on the agreement, the partial agreement.
Okay. I just want to go back and make sure. So you're not saying, well, a problem and one of the reasons we should vacate the stipulation is because the judge didn't make a written finding that this was just and equitable, because that's what I thought I read your brief to say.
What I'm saying is it's not statutory. It's case law. And I believe, according to the Supreme Court in Karen v. Karen, that a court, when it is reviewing a stipulated J&D, that it has an obligation to find that it's just and equitable or fair and reasonable. What's important here is that the facts before the court show the exact opposite. I mean, when you have a prima facie case submitted to the court with regard to 34% versus 66%, 0.3% versus 99.7%, That is an objectively prima facie case that this is not a fair stipulated J&D. And this is where the judge abused his role, in my opinion, is that he made it more important with regard to his role as a mediator and his observations with regard to the settlement than his role to determine whether this was a just and equitable settlement.
So, counsel, if I could ask you about, I think it's respondent's addendum at 2, where the judge in, it's, I believe, February 16th order, says each party specifically agreed off the record to allow the court to conduct the settlement conference. And in addition, each party waived any right to object to the undersigned judge acting as the ultimate trier of fact. Yeah, that language. So as far as the judge's role conducting the settlement conference, didn't your party waive? Doesn't that language mean
there's no evidence that waiver was made, Your Honor.
Well,
it's not on the record. It is not on the record. And I think that's important because it is required to be on the record. But more importantly, doing a settlement conference and doing conference with each individual separately are two separate things. And there needs to be a waiver if the court is going to take ex parte communication. And that there is no evidence that that occurred.
Is there anything in the record that shows that after this order went in effect, your client's counsel said, you know, no, we didn't agree to that? Or is there anything?
Well, the evidence in the record is that I don't think it's been raised at a lower court, actually. I don't think that argument has been, Your Honor. But the evidence is clearly in the record as to why my client believed that there was duress here. And that's a very simple story. This is all in the record, Your Honor, because it's been pled in the answer. My client, this relationship had significant violence in it. My client also had suffered violence when she was in Kenya I don't know the specifics, but she was tortured in Kenya. That information is here. What her counsel was trying to do in front of the court before the court interrupted was describe to the court the following. When Mr. Kanaki came, when the husband came in with a settlement, his first settlement offer was that she take everything, but he take all of her family's property. That's the first offer. My client could not believe that. And then the judge and the counsel admits told her, well, that could happen. And at that point, with all those years of abuse, with all that fear, with the fact that she could be responsible for losing her entire family's home and assets, she panicked and made an offer that said he can have all marital property, basically all marital property, but I keep my family residence. And that's why the court made a serious error in not recusing himself. Because this is what happened, which you could assume what happened. He then based his factual findings on whether there's duress or not, based on his observations of the offers going back and forth.
Counsel.
Which is, we can't do that, Your Honor. We are told as lawyers, we are sanctioned from the bench if we even mention what a settlement offer or a settlement response would be.
Counsel, I am following what you're saying. And it's a difficult situation. But you're really talking about a lot of problems you have with the way the judge handled this and the judge's role. But if that wasn't raised below, how are we to consider that for the first time here?
But it was raised below, Your Honor. It was raised in the oral argument. It was raised in the oral argument in front of the judge. My client's lawyer very clearly tried to lay out exactly what I just said, and the judge shot her down and mentioned three times officer of the court. As an officer of court.
But your concerns now about the judge's compliance with Rule 2.9, I believe it is.
Right.
I mean, that wasn't raised below, was it? I'm just trying to make sure I understand.
I know, Your Honor.
I don't think I had to.
I really don't think I was required to, because it is that would mean that I would have to file a amended findings and a motion for a new trial, which I do not under the law. It puts counsel in a very difficult position to point out to the judge that you made errors here when you're asking the judge to give you relief. And I don't think it's required by the law. Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Allison Eklund, and I am the attorney for the respondent on appeal, Jacob Kanake. I have been his attorney from the very beginning of this case. And the arguments that are being presented on appeal by the wife are extraordinary. She has had now three attorneys, and there is, as is evident from the statements made and questions asked by my colleague and by the court, a lot has been missing from the understanding of the record by the wife's latest attorney. Most notably, the consent to mediation and to use the trial court judge as the mediator, which was recorded in the February 16, 2018 order by Judge Bryan.
What awareness was there at that time of her claims of abuse?
Your Honor, in the petition for divorce, which my client filed, he made only a claim for property division. In the answer to the petition and counterpetition, the wife raised many allegations of abuse. Thereafter, and I think that the primary reason why the case went on for years, was that my client was horrified to learn that his wife's asylum petition was based on false claims of abuse by him, and that she was using or attempting to use the divorce court as a way to create a public record of her allegations to substantiate those findings, which otherwise, according to my client, and has this is a historical back and forth, absolute categorical denial that anything violent ever happened. In fact, the main source of disagreement between the parties, according to my client, and the record will show in the briefs that have been filed, is that the parties were non-communicative with each other. So this whole story about abuse has been manufactured and pressed by the wife in order to substantiate something.
Did she ever concede that?
She has never done that. It continues, obviously, to be a disputed point.
But if there's that point, why would you have mediation? Because if there's any allegation of abuse, we usually say that's not a case for mediation.
Your Honor, that's a very good question, but she consented to it. And if that isn't...
It's not her consent. It's the court saying, well, I sure wouldn't have gone forward.
My point, Your Honor, is that she never, her attorneys, none of them, ever raised any objection to moving forward with mediation. And the parties have gone through almost every kind of mediation. And they never objected to being in the same room together. They never objected to being to having the back and forth from room to room shuttling. They never objected, neither party ever objected to mediation. And so it has happened four times. And the point here, too, is that we live in Minnesota's a no-fault divorce case. Section 58 of 518 specifically requires that the judge not make findings in a division of property that relate to allegations of spousal misconduct. And so you have in the record repeated attempts by the wife to raise these issues and repeated resounding silence of the court in addressing any of them because the court was barred from doing so. This is just a property division case. It never has been any more than that. The only way that other issues come into the case are that my client raised the issue that the wife had left the family completely without telling anyone where she was going to live in January 2010 and hadn't been seen since except in occasional correspondence between her and the children and never direct or even indirect communication between the husband and wife since January 2010 with the exception of court and through counsel.
So,
just out of curiosity, what's the educational level of both parties?
Both parties have a PhD. Both parties have one or more master's degrees. Both parties have been employed or employable for as long as they've been in the United States.
And both speak fluent English?
Both speak fluent English. The wife can work. She has asylum. The husband has a limited duration visa that requires him to return to Kenya after a certain number of years. I believe it's 5, but I cannot state that. I'm not an immigration attorney.
Counsel, the big issue before us, obviously, is whether it was an abuse of discretion not to vacate the stipulation. I'm looking at the Togil versus Togil, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, case. And it says that there are 4 factors to look at. And I'm concerned about the 4th factor. When questioned by the judge, the party acknowledged the understanding of the terms and considering them fair and equitable. And when I looked through the transcript from, I think it was June or July of 2018, certainly Judge Bryan went through with the parties the specific terms, but I don't find a place where he's asking them about those terms and if it's fair and equitable. And shouldn't that concern us, given the, arguably disproportionate amount of the property awarded to your client?
Your Honor, the disproportionate property award to my client was as a result of the significant absence of the wife from the home while there were minor children living in the home, which is one of the criteria under Section 58 of 518. And the reason why the parties don't have a detailed finding there is because we have oral testimony on the record. I think it was February 20th. We have them agreeing to the specific terms of the property distribution.
But that's agreeing to the specific terms of the property distribution, which is different than whether the party considers them fair and equitable.
That's true.
Which is the 4th factor, which is what is troubling me.
But as the court remarked in earlier questions to opposing counsel, the draft stipulated judgment and decree was prepared by her attorney and makes the findings. So this is what we have to work with.
But that was after that. I was asking about the maintenance and, you know, attorney's fees portion, but that stipulation was offered after the judges said, no, you cannot withdraw from the property settlement.
Your Honor, the court would have had continuing jurisdiction over maintenance claims, and at any time she could have asked the court to continue to address that.
I guess I'm not worried about maintenance right now. I'm concerned in looking at whether or not it was abuse of discretion not to vacate the stipulation, that factor about whether the parties were questioned by the judge about whether not only understanding the terms, but whether they were fair and equitable.
Your Honor, I think that the record shows when the parties were walked through the agreement that they had just agreed to in mediation, when the parties reconvened in the district courtroom and were asked questions and were by the court as well as by their attorneys, I think that covers the court's concerns with respect to maintenance, considering that she could have again raised those issues and continue to come back.
Was there a point where she was asked by the court when they put the property agreement on the record, mm-hmm. and I forget, I think that was March or like February hearing, was she asked about whether she thought the terms were fair and equitable? That's my question, because that is one of the factors that the district court should look at when deciding whether or not to vacate a stipulation.
Your Honor, I'm not looking at that transcript at the moment, so I would have to go back and look at it carefully, which I'm sure that the court will do. If it isn't there, then my position would be that she consented to it impliedly through presenting the court with a final draft through her attorney. If her express question...
How do you interpret the transcript reference that the appellant gave us, you know, page 62, that discussion that preceded the proposed order that was submitted by the wife's attorney? So where they... counsel specifically says, we don't agree to anything.
I believe the court is referring to the June hearing when it had become clear that the respondent wife in district court
I could be wrong, but I think if I was following appellant's argument, it was a hearing from November 2018 where, you know, her motion to withdraw has already been denied.
Correct.
And I believe that counsel, but I'm asking for your take, is trying to preserve, you know, that objection. So by saying that we don't agree to anything.
Right. It's evident from that record that the respondent wife had changed her mind. And that is all that that means, because all of the consents necessary to get to the point where the parties were ready to enforce the mediated settlement agreement were in place. The respondent wife had changed her mind. And keep in mind that the actual terms of the settlement agreement were the wife's proposal. And when she states, quote, I panicked, or through her attorney in the brief, that she panicked, this isn't consistent with the way that mediation is handled. The parties were entirely in separate rooms. The judge was having detailed, intense conversations with each side in the presence of attorneys. The parties had significant downtime while they were waiting for each side to meet with the judge and have those difficult conversations. And then they had downtime, and then they came back to the courtroom, and then the judge questioned them on whether what they had just agreed to was what they really wanted. And so... let's be clear that, and Judge Bryan made this expressly clear in his orders, that the respondent wife in the district court got what she proposed, what she wanted, and that the only concession that she had to make was in allowing for a little more of my client's retirement savings to be allocated to my client, in consistent with the 66% division that my client was demanding, considering that he had solely raised 2 out of 3 of the minor children for the duration of, I think it was 6 or 7 years, that he was the sole parent in the household. And that was a legitimate claim that he had, a legitimate argument that was hotly and forcefully argued back and forth during very long mediation sessions. So the requirements of justice, that each side be represented, that each side agree to these terms, that it be memorialized, I believe that those requirements have been met, even if there isn't an express question by the judge to the party to say, do you consent to not, to dropping your claim for, and then the health insurance and the claims that she's now seeking to revive. Once a party says, this is the agreement, this is the whole agreement, I agree to it, and it's fair, and I agree to give up all my other arguments, then going back and saying, oh, wait, we didn't really quite talk about the health insurance. It's especially specious under the circumstances because the parties at that time were both working hourly wage, very, very low income jobs. They are equally educated, equal ability to work, and the claim for maintenance and the claim for health insurance is wildly inappropriate under the circumstances. So these are being raised on appeal in an effort to essentially prolong the proceedings. And this is, as I'm sure the court is aware, an unfortunate situation where two people are bitter, and things happen when people are bitter, and the wife really wants to drag this out. And my client over and over and over has tried to do whatever it takes to make this proceeding end. In the last hearing, you'll see when 2 additional pieces of property were supposedly discovered, my client said, fine, you can have them. Just end this. Just let's be finished with this. So he has tried over and over to say, I will do whatever it takes. If we need to negotiate this, that's fine. But there is a demonstrated in the record unwillingness on the part of wife to reach an agreement and stick to it. She changed her mind, and that's her story. And she's sticking to, I changed my mind, and that's the end of it. It is not an abuse of discretion for the court to uphold the party's settlement agreement, considering that they mediated four times. They mediated intensely and completely on all the issues. Neither party asked for maintenance. Neither party asked for health insurance. The court made a full and final settlement, asked the parties if they agreed to it, and the parties agreed to it in court. Thank you.
Here's the main problem. Most of what was told you is nowhere in the record on a factual finding. And again, in order for the court to enter a judgment decree that takes away one client's rights under the statute, there either has to be an agreement, which is enforceable, or there has to be a trial. And neither of those occurred here. No, I looked at every single transcript. That's why I told the court that it is missing that question. And that question is very important. Do you believe this is fair and equitable? Because, and the reason you have to ask it is to make absolutely sure that the person sitting there knows they have a right to a fair and equitable settlement. Because we know what can happen. We know mediators can push too hard. We know lawyers can say, oh, you don't have enough money to fight this. You can't do that. That's why that question is there. Do you believe this is a fair and equitable settlement? And it was not asked. And we have the repercussions. It is extremely important that on the record, my client's attorney says we have no agreement outside of those two pieces of property. And that's important because there are elements of this agreement, and maintenance was asked for. And again, we're doing the same thing that you can't do. You cannot, as a matter of fact, tell a judge what was offered in settlement. We have an entire statute about that with regard to protecting mediation. And yet, that's what was said to you. Maintenance was never asked for. Well, I don't know this, and you don't know this, and you shouldn't know it. It was asked for in the answer. And it was asked for specifically with factual support as to why. There is never a factual finding with regard to whether maintenance is appropriate or inappropriate in this case, because there's no stipulation. Here's the other side of that story that I need to tell you, which is in my client's answer. There was an assault. He choked her. She left. She couldn't go back. She was scared to death. In all through the mediation, he would not give her justice. And then at the last time, he comes in and says, fine, you can have everything, but I take all of your family's property. And then she reacted just like any abuse victim would, just like any victim of torture would. She said, I can't have that. And the part that makes this so regrettable is the judge participated in that. And I get it. I mediate cases. I know you can say something like, well, that can happen. But then when he's the trier of fact and the attorney says, well, Your Honor, when he's demanding, how was she manipulated? How was she manipulated? And she tries to explain to the judge, well, it was you. You communicated to her that this was possible. At that point, the appropriate thing to do is to recuse and ask another judge to look at the record to see whether this agreement should be enforced. And he didn't do that, and instead he used the very evidence that he gained as a mediator to justify his factual determination that there was no duress. Your Honor, there is a huge injustice here, Your Honors. The court has the power to correct that. It is consistent with the law. The court doesn't have to do anything outside of the parameters of justice and case law, and I ask that you do that. Thank you.
Thanks very much, counsel. The matter is now submitted to this court for its decision, and we will issue a written decision within the statutory time frame. Thank you again.